SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Gold Cup Day, Ascot fans. It is Ladies' Day, too, at Ascot, the Thursday, and the festivities are bathed in sunshine, finally, after two terrible weather days. Not unusual, but it certainly has impacted what's going to go on today. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to SiriusXM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and Wesley Ward in the last hour making the decision that Maven, the American Faro colt for Richie Raven, is not going to participate in the Norfolk. Too soft. And in fact, that reminds me to retweet the turf tracks going, as it were, going for Royal Ascot, soft and good to soft in places. I'm going to send that retweet out for everybody for consideration on the going. And they apparently, between the high sun and some wind, they're hopeful that, you know, as the day goes on and into the second half, into later today and Friday and Saturday, that the course is going to firm up with the worst of the weather behind them. And unfortunately, it's going to cost Maven the chance to run today. But Wesley expects, and he even said, apparently, he told Brittany Ayrton that if the race was tomorrow, he'd probably run them, and it'd probably be okay. But right now, a little too soft for his going preference, as it were. So no Maven, and we were looking forward to that, but that's all right. And Wesley will round out his starters tomorrow and on Saturday. We won't be with you tomorrow. We're going to have to do best of as we head to Central New York later today. And we've got Zachary and Andrea's wedding on Saturday outside of Cazenovia, sort of between Manlius and Cazenovia, sort of just off the edge of the lake. And kind of for me, it's kind of exciting and a little different. Haven't participated in this vein, I guess, as in this case, as a stepfather. So those elements, family function wise, are going to be new, going to be a new experience for me, and excited for the kids. They live in Rochester, and of course, Tina's been heavily involved in all the planning and everything that's gone on. So we won't be with you tomorrow. We'll come back Monday and go over the weekend, start to celebrate New England racing history next week. And that'll culminate on Friday with a show from Suffolk Downs for the first and only time. Unfortunately, still expectation that they'll be racing in New England in some form, with the potential for the Suffolk Downs entity to take their license and bring it to Great Barrington. We'll discuss that too next week when we're together with Chip and with everybody involved, Lou Raffetto and. It's going to be very, I think, I can't say you know, totally sad because it's something that everybody's prepared for. But, you know, they were dealt a very odd hand, and there's no point in, you know, in kind of rehashing the way that, you know, that gaming license was distributed in the Boston area. But it certainly feels like the rug was pulled out from under them. And you know, for those that have never, I mean, I've been by Suffolk. I mean, it's a very nice facility, and that part of it is really unfortunate. You know, to have a very, you know, a very functional and, you know, clean, well-lighted place, as it were, in the major metropolitan area. We talk about this, that, you know, it makes it harder to, you know, to keep the game at, you know, at the level that it, you know, at least is for now. I mean, you can't generate horse players and potential owners, you know, the two most important elements, if people aren't exposed to the game, if they don't have a place to go. Now, New Englanders, you know, certainly can come to New York, and we get tons of New Englanders that, you know, come over, Connecticut, Rhode Island, virtually everywhere out of New England come to Saratoga. So there is, you know, there is racing for New Englanders within, you know, 2.5 hours at the most from almost everywhere in New England. So on that front, it is within reach, but a little different when, you know, you could basically take the T to get to Suffolk. So I am looking forward to going out there, and I appreciate Lou Raffetto asked if, you know, invited me to come for the weekend. And I said, you know, can we broadcast? And he said, absolutely. That'd be tremendous. And we're going to, you know, we'll get as many. And I think it's going to take more than just Friday to do it. I think we're going to have to, you know, reach out to New Englanders that, you know, the far flung, and they were and over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, they basically were sent out into the world. And, yeah, a lot ended up in Delaware, and you'll see, you know, the New England names that are very familiar, that, you know, Tampa in the winter and Gulfstream too, but you know, a certain brand of racing and a certain level of horse that is basically a B, you know, B circuit type runners. So we'll do that next week, and then we'll take the I think we'll probably have to take our, you know, early summer, late spring vacation. We'll do it the following week and come back and shockingly you have to be ready for Saratoga. So that's the next 2-3 weeks. I'm just looking at the calendar. Yeah. I don't see what else we can do. Yeah. We'll take, and we, you know, we'll try to preview the July 4th, racing as best we can. We'll certainly be able to recap it, when we get back. And that would be July 8th. So yeah, we'll be off July 1st through the 5th. And yeah, and I think Joe and Deja are ready for a break. Good news from Casey regarding health situation, out of intensive care after a testing couple of weeks and back in a regular hospital room. Still many, many things to deal with, and but an encouraging several days this week since Monday. He's been increasingly seeing positive signs. So, and again, I appreciate everybody's concern, and we haven't made. We've tried not to make too much of it, but I can't tell you that the effort of Joe and of Deja to get behind the board and keep the show basically alive here during when it came to Triple Crown. I mean, arguably the most the most acute and important part of the broadcast year. And that with the work that they've done has just been unbelievable, to say the least. And I listenership has been, all of you have been understanding, we're doing everything we can, and we just want Casey to get healthy and get back more than anything. A couple of thoughts. We're going to get Dick Powell in here shortly, and we'll look at the rest of that Norfolk field, the opener at Royal Ascot. Tony Black later, Steve Haskin. Steve loves Royal Ascot. And the middle part of the card, to give you a quick glance, you got the Norfolk, you got the Hampton Court afterward at top of hour two, the Ribblesdale. The Hampton Court's a grade three, group three. The Norfolk's a group two, of course, for the two-year-olds. And they're going to go five furlongs, mile and a quarter for the Hampton Court. And the Ribblesdale, they go a mile and a half. These are the three-year-old fillies, and that division looks internationally like it's waiting for somebody to step forward. Then comes the group one of the day, the Gold Cup. One of the highlights of the stand, the 2.5 mile standard. Lots of O'Briens, including Joseph. He's got a long shot in there, Master of Reality. And then after we get off the air, noon, the Britannia, which is a nice handicap, a gigantic field, typically, yep, gigantic field. And then the King George, also a handicap, with a bulky group. When Dick joins us next, he's going to try to explain the tote issue that has really flummoxed the American punter. The tote yesterday, most notably, the difference between, some of the, the ADW signal carriers, quite interesting and a big disparity, obviously. And it has to do with the number of entrants and whether the different tote servers can co-mingle. And those that can't, after a certain number of horses, they're creating a separate pool. And as a result, yesterday, and it was funny because our friend and one of our partners, Steve Carlin, he sent me the price on raffle prize, which was $84 on some tote and $33 on others because it was two different pools. So Dick is going to try to explain that why that happens. So, and why it happened, and maybe we can speculate as to today. So that was a little that had everybody kind of blinking their eyes. Not that 33 wasn't a nice number, but 84 was better. It's pretty crazy. That was the race with Kamari saw. I didn't see much more about Johnny's suspension. Rich Ang today. We got to get to Rich, but first Dick Powell, and we'll lead into the Norfolk and get some ideas about today. And we'll look at the fields came together for Saturday's racing. Kind of another nice eclectic weekend. The Roxalana at Churchill. The Wild Applause in New York, as we talked with Andy. The Singspiel up at Woodbine. The Wilshire. It's closing weekend at Santa Anita. The Ohio Derby we already talked about. But Dick Powell next, getting going here at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You never call my name on the telephone. You never call my name on the telephone. I can see them calling on the telephone. I try and call your phone.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 20 into hour one, Dick Powell joins us, and the last couple of days here, the last 3 days of Royal Ascot in the offing. And Dick, how'd you make out the first two?
Not bad. Yesterday, I hit the St. James Palace because I took a stand against the two fillies, and Frankie got that one home at a 3-1. So that was good. And the rain has really played havoc because no one expected this kind of ground,
no.
Including the trainers and everybody else. So Wesley's already scratched Maven from the Norfolk Stakes in race one today because of the ground. he said the rest of his horses for the meet should be okay. But they just got a tremendous amount of rain. The ground went very soft, very squishy. Not everyone grabbed it. A sea of class. Just William Haggis was beating himself up by just racing her because the ground just went against her. And she kind of was safely ridden around the track. I wouldn't worry about that performance. But, yeah, it's been a major factor. The times is very slow. I saw yesterday 5 furlongs, 103. And I guess they're running into a headwind in these straightaway races. So you're going to see some slow times today.
You know, you mentioned Crystal Ocean's win. And did you see the, I think I retweeted it, or I think I sent it to Johnny because I got a kick out of it. Larry Fitzgerald of the Arizona Cardinals, who apparently is very friendly with the Rothschilds, which which I got a big kick out of. Yeah, one of the Rothschilds was with him, and she explained to Nick Luck that who's also very friendly with them, and I would love to hear the backstory of how Larry Fitzgerald came to have a relationship with the Rothschild family. Yeah. But Evelyn's Crystal Ocean, very, very big win. And Sir Michael, later after we got off the air, AFAC was the winner in the noon race, the Royal Hunt. And then in the finale, Southern Hills, and we were trying a couple of different things. That was the Windsor Castle. One thing, Dick, before we look at the Norfolk, we got about 10 minutes before the first today. The confusion over the tote and why certain tote providers are having an issue with fields, what, over 20? And whether they can commingle those fields and then having to set up a separate pool. What can you enlighten us with on this front?
I after you had texted me, I called a couple of people. They're working on it. The one thing that's confusing, just right off the rip, is we're watching two broadcasts. Brittany and Nick are doing an American broadcast that weaves into the ITV British broadcast. So when the British are talking about odds, they're talking about bookmaker odds. When we're betting, we are betting into the UK tote pool. Like for instance, right now, with 10 minutes to go in the Norfolk, there's $401,000 in the win pool, $283,000 in the place pool. So those are massive pools, and obviously they're all commingled from Great Britain, United States, wherever else. Now, I know that there might have been an issue with Hong Kong coming in, because I don't know if Hong Kong can take more than 24 betting interests. Because for some reason yesterday they had horses listed as mutual fields. And I thought the mutual field was a big play the way it shook out. And then they all but one scratched. And then today in the fifth race, there's like 8 or 9 horses in the mutual field. And so far, they're all in, but we'll see if they run. So that's been confusing. Just watching it and seeing odds quoted that are not necessarily the odds you're playing. Now, when they show these current odds, from Twin Spires, that should be the co-mingled pool. But they're implying that it's an American pool. And from what I can see, that's not the case. So
interesting.
And the other confusing part when you see the bookmaker pools is even if they were the same, when a bookmaker puts up 2-1, it's going to pay $4. It's not going to pay $6 like we do. They do not include the stake in their odds, but virtually everyone in the world does it that way. So you'll hear a 2-1 shot be quoted as even money, and you're like, wait a minute, it's not even money. Well, it is. And just things like that get confusing. So it's more confusing than normal, and I think this year with all the commingled simulcasting that they've attempted, I think that's made some issues that are hard to explain.
Huh. And I know that there's been dribs and drabs on this topic that have come out. Well, I guess we'll see because we certainly have opportunity today, Dick, with the fields, with these bulky fields that may be affected, especially late, in the fifth and the sixth. Let's take a look at the Norfolk, and we certainly were excited about, had been excited about Maven's involvement. So you know, that maybe opens things up a little bit for the American betting public. What's your lean? And then we'll compare the bookie shop numbers with the tote.
Well, I was dead set against Maven. I thought he was okay in his maiden win at Aqueduct. And then he was in a sale Monday night. And
right.
He was bought back for $700,000. And I thought that was part of the hype, that he was getting hyped way more than he should have, plus being first American horse to run by American Pharoah, Wesley Ward. So he was getting, I was more than willing to bet against him. Unfortunately, the one I like, Sunday Sovereign, is the pretty significant favorite right now, number 13. A couple of wins in Ireland, yielding turf, soft turf, won them easily. Equiano was a top sprint sire over in Europe, so he's bred to be fast, but he's also shown he can handle the bad going. And I played a Quinella with him and the 11, Real Appeal. And what I liked with Real Appeal was he's coming in from France where the ground is not really firm, but he does show a maiden win on yielding turf. He may won two other races on good turf. He's already won at 6 furlongs, so sometimes these 5-furlong races, despite how short they are, become a little bit of a test of stamina. So he's already shown he can win at 6, and he was 34-1 when I bet him. So I played a Quinella, 11, 13. I guess I'd have to move Godolphin up with the scratch and Maven, number 5, Expressionist, from Charlie Appleby, who won first out on soft ground right over this race course.
Some other, any other price considerations before I run down these numbers?
Well, Aiden O'Brien, I don't know what he is now. He was 18-1 with number 7, King Neptune. Yeah, he's still 18. And he's by Warfront. He's run second a couple of times. He has a win. But he's making his fourth start. He's a Warfront out of a Spikestown there. And he's shown he can run okay over a less than firm going. So that's a big price on Aiden. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You like him to take somebody. And all the money seems to be gravitating towards number 13. And then O'Brien has number 10, Mount Fuji, who's the son of Dark Angel, who also won first out. And Aiden doesn't win first out that often. I mean, his big horses oftentimes just get it like a schooling effort first time, and then go time the second time. So these are winning first time out, which is a big sign for him. This is the son of Dark Angel that Ryan Moore's going to ride. He usually gets the better of the Aiden O'Brien horses, but then you pay for it with the price. But they're all good value because the 13 is undervalued.
Well, remarkably, and this is the first time in the 3 days that I'm seeing this, the tote odds and the bookie shop prices are virtually in harmony. The one disparity looks like the 4, Dubai Station. The Carl Burke runner with Jamie Spencer. This is 16-1 in the bookie shop and 33-1 on the tote. But everybody else is really in line. Sunday Sovereign, 3-2 in the shops, 8-5 on the tote. Virtually everybody, 7.5, 15-2 on Mount Fuji, 8-1 on the tote, and 15-2 in the shops. Misty Gray looks like he is being overbet compared to the bookies, 16-1 in the shops and 9-1 on the tote. But everything else is really in harmony, unbelievable. Air Force Jet, 8-1 in the shops, 9-1 on the tote. That's the Joseph O'Brien runner with O'Shane Murphy. And DeTore, Simon Crisford, Ali, 5-1 in the shops, 6-1 on the tote. So, boy, the markets are aligned, Dick.
Yes. Yeah, especially with the rankings. The prices can vary. But as long as the 13 is the favorite and the next one is the second favorite, you know, whoever else is third favorite, That's important. The only thing I'll point out is 3-2 is a lot less than 8-5 because 3-2 with the books is $3 horse.
Right.
And 8-5 is $5.60 on tote. So it's a little bit different. But you're right. They all kind of are lining up, which, you know, with 3-year-olds, maybe we'll have a nice formful race.
3-2 now, actually, on the tote board as well as the 3-2 in the market. But still, as you mentioned, they're still different. Let me catch up on the video. And, Joe, give me a take a look at how close they are while I wait for my screen to pull up. And there we go. So they're milling about, Dick, as they'll want to do. It always looks like a bit of mayhem pre-race before they load over there.
Well, did you see the horse get loose yesterday?
Yes, yes, yes.
There was no Greg Blassie to bail them out.
No, not at all.
Horse went up the track. Back down. I knew when he put his head down to start eating grass, he was giving up. unfortunately, there are people out on the track trying to wave at the horse, and that's very dangerous.
Yeah, that's not gonna get it done.
No, but he broke through the gate. He didn't even rear and pull out the back. He broke through the gate and said, "Hey, I got a lot of room up here." So that was unfortunate for the connections, but luckily they collared him without any real incident.
Yeah,
they're milling. You know what they do when you watch racing from UK during the year? When they're going to the post, it'll say going down, and when they're at the post, they'll say going behind. So they're behind the starting gate, which is where they are now.
Best of luck, Dick, and Joe, try to refresh that because it is on, and you're not gonna get it on the ADW. Let me pull it up here, and we may give it to you just over the. Here we go.
They've only got 2 furlongs to go now, and it is Cool Sphere, big price leader down the centre in the white face, leading to the royal blue and white colours of Sunday Sovereign. Misty Grey coming. Ali is there in the beige jacket. The far side, the green sleeves, is Strive for Glory. Ali now, Frankie Dettori comes through to take it up inside the closing stages. Goes on to Ventura Rebel, is moving through to second place to Give Chase. Ali is still in front. Ventura Rebel closing, but Ali just a Ventura Rebel. Dubai Station behind him in third position, home in fourth place for Strive for Glory, and 10 behind though.
Well, it's... I guess, Dick, the easiest system here is to just bet Frankie.
Yes, which many have done, including the day he gets 7 out of 7.
Unbelievable. This is the one horse, Ali, 6-1 on the tote, and that's a nice price in here. And who was second?
14.
The 14, okay. Ventura Rebel, there he is. And
yeah, 12 was right up there. 12, I think, ran fourth. He was pressing early and got out of the gate well. He ran good. Ground didn't look that bad. I didn't see any gigantic clumps or anything.
No. And they although very few seemed, Dick, to rally, I mean, to make up ground either, though.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I didn't catch the time when they hit the post, but
well, waiting for. Let me switch screens here, and for some reason down in Florida, Joe had trouble with the NBC coverage. But let me so the one, the 14, the four, Dubai Station at a big price was fourth, and we lost the and the 12 and the 12. Oh, how about that? That's an American bred. That's an American bred. Strive for glory. A dialed in colt.
Yes.
All right. We'll wait for prices. But I conversed yesterday on Twitter with someone. He said he was betting DeTorey. So that may be the formula for spots where you're not sure. All right, so we'll wait and we'll get some thoughts about the Hampton Court once the screens change and things go official. Dick, in the meantime, before we talk about the season at Hong Kong winding down, nice work on Tuesday at Presque Isle, because you got the first winner home, paid $720, that master of the house, and then in the nightcap at a very fat 11-1, Echoes of Thunder ran terrific, and that was a nice price, because he had been 6-1 morning line and goes off at almost twice that, and 1060 to place, and a almost $59 exacta. So good job there.
Yeah, thank you. That worked out well, and it's great with Presque Isle, because the horses come back so quickly, 2-3 weeks, so they're like always in the box, and it's a very familiar process. And that worked out, because he drew outside, and I just had a feeling he was going to run better than expected, and he did. So, but yesterday at Hong Kong, Now, we're going back to the normal schedule for the rest of the meet, with Sha Tin on Sunday and Happy Valley on Wednesday. We haven't had Happy Valley for like 3 weeks. But yesterday we ran a Sha Tin, and the card started out kind of formful, an even money winner, a 480 winner, and then 1340, 1160, 960, $22, $74, $1260, $124, $72, and $13. So there were some bombs galore. And one of the races had a gigantic underneath pay. I think the 37-1 shot had a 45-1 shot run second. Matthew Poon rode both the 62-1 and the 36-1. So his ROI is probably going to be pretty solid for the meet, because those are two gigantic wins. Couple winners for Shum yesterday, a couple winners for Young, the jockey. And if you like bombs, Sha Tin was the place to be yesterday, because they were coming like crazy.
How many meetings do we have left?
I think we have six. Looking at it today, it's in the back of the PPs. We have next Wednesday, Happy Valley, then Monday. That's a curveball. Monday, July 1st at Sha Tin. Back to Happy Valley. Back to Sha Tin, Happy Valley. And we wrap up July 14th. So just as Saratoga's opening, Hong Kong takes their summer break, get out of the heat and humidity. So we have six more cards after this coming Sunday. Sunday will be contested at Sha Tin. And let me just make triple sure of something, because sometimes they throw me curveballs, Steve, and I look like Dave Kingman at the plate. So. No, I'm good. And by the way, in the fifth royal carriage today was Dr. Vinny Bumbatz and some people you don't hear about very often. So they tell you who's in each carriage, and after the first two, I'm like, I don't know who these people are. When you watch this every day, it does get a tad tedious.
Which I don't know if tedious. I don't know if tedious is the description that people are looking for, but I've got it behind me, and but from 8:30 to 9, I did actually see a little bit of the ITV coverage this morning. They were introducing their team around that are scattered all over the racetrack, and then it interfaces. It's pretty remarkable, actually, the way NBC is doing the undercarriage, the underpinnings with their staff and the ITV international broadcast.
No, it really is. They know when they're going to break, so they know when ITV is going to play a feature, a tape presentation, and they jump in with their own stuff, and Nick and Brittany, and it's very well done. As far as bringing the British racing to America, if you just have the British broadcast on, it gets a little tough. So having Nick and Brittany there, big, big help. Having some American horses there, interviewing Tyler Gaffleon and Johnny Velasquez and Leslie and Joe Orsino, stuff like that. That's been very good. And the high def, the pictures are spectacular. The coverage, the video is just fantastic. So I can deal with the rest.
No, and it's nice. It is nice to get the sun out too. And it's so much. It's got such a an advantage the way it looks when the sun is shining. And yesterday was, that was as bad a day as I've seen in memory from Ascot. When they pulled the cameras back, you could barely see what was going on. They've got those mobile cameras that move with the action, which is a lot of fun. And that was helpful because from far away, from the distance cameras, you couldn't make out a horse.
Yes. Yes.
Now, well, Dick, a couple of ideas here. Looking forward on the day. What else? Who else you like today?
Well, Sunday we have. Well, I'm sorry. Let me do Hong Kong first.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
So Sunday at Shot 10, we have two Group 3 stake races, which is nice this late in the season. Race 3 is a 1,400-meter race, 7 furlongs, and it attracted a field of 8. I like number 5 more than Lucky. When you look at the ratings and the weights, the other thing that you can look very quickly at is who they've been in against. And when you start seeing recognizable names in the company lines, usually they've been running against pretty high-class horses. More Than Lucky has been competing well. He hasn't won in a while, but therefore he gets in with 120 pounds instead of the higher weights. And I think for trainer Frankie Lawrence, had a great meet. I think he can pull off a bit of an upset. He draws the rail. He doesn't have blazing speed, but there's not a lot of speed in this race. So I think he can get good position. We'll see what happens from there. Inside, number 1, Ping Wu Spark. Zach Purton, leading rider, record-breaking rider, is going to get the mount for the first time. He hadn't been riding this one before. And this one has some speed, has some back class, has been in against Group 1, Group 2 type horses. So he should fit against these conditions. And third, number 4, Time to Celebrate. John Sides, Jal Marrera. Jal just went past 800 career victories in Hong Kong, and he's done it in the quickest amount of time. He missed the first 2-3 months of this year's meet. Otherwise, him and Purton would probably be battling down to the wire. But day in, day out, he's formidable, and you got to keep track of what he's doing, and when he rides the sides, it's extremely dangerous. So, Time to Celebrate, 5-year-old gelding, been good win earlier in the year against not quite this class level. This is a little bit of a move up, but not that bad. And he gets in with 122 pounds. So if you're going to run against better horses, get the weight and see what happens. So race 3, we're going to go with number 5, More Than Lucky, number 1, Ping Wu Spark, and number 4, Time to Celebrate. And then the other Group 3 is race number 8, This is 1,000 meters, so this is a straightaway sprint like we're seeing over in Ascot. And I like number 5, Citron Spirit, with Aldo De Maia riding. And when you look at these horses, so many of them were in against Beauty Generation, Exultant. I mean, the top horses in Hong Kong, international Group 1 stakes winners. So they can be excused. And also, when you look at the odds that they've been going off at, well, if they're in against Beauty Generation, you know, they're lucky to be 20 to 1. So that doesn't affect me like it normally would, because that's one of the first things I look at, have they been getting bet lately. Citron Spirit did not get bet last time out, but I think today going the 5 furlongs against company that he's run well against before, I think his big lay kick can be a factor and maybe get up in time. Second, we'll go with number 3, Simply Brilliant, a 5-year-old gelded son of Franco. We've seen a lot of Frankos running at Royal Ascot. He was third, beaten 2 lengths behind Beauty Generation 2 starts back, which is a big endorsement. And third, we'll go with number 4, Seasoned Bloom. Grant Van Nierkerk is the rider. Ran against Beauty Generation 3 out of its last 4 starts, so it didn't run that bad, beaten 3, beaten 2, beaten 4, and now shortens back to 1,000 meters. So we'll try to get the upset here with number 5, Citron Spirit, number 3, Simply Brilliant, and number 4, Seasoned Bloom at Sha Tin this coming Sunday, early Sunday morning for us in the West and the East Coast.
Very good.
Okay, Ascot. Yeah, through the first race. The Hampton Court at 1.25 miles. I like number 5, Cap Francais. 15-1 morning line. It's turning back in distance. Was only beaten 5 lengths by Anthony Van Dyke on soft ground last time out in a Derby trial at Linkfield. Now, that's Linkfield on turf, not Linkfield on synthetic. But that was a good effort. Got off the classic trail. Wasn't good enough to go to the Derby. But he shows up here for Guy Mosset. And, of course, looks like he can run all day. And the turn back to 1.25 miles should help because it's a testing 1.25 miles. And I think Cap Francais, who Frankel's unusual sire, I'm sure Sid Fernando would agree. He's had 30 group stakes winners already, but his offspring do not have the brilliance that he had. They're not coming out and killing it at 7 furlongs a mile. They're not killing it at early 2-year-olds. They're killing it going longer. The longer they go, the better the Frankels seem to be. So I think with the test of stamina, especially being out of a mare by Darshan, Cap Francais at 15-1, Jamie Spencer, lot to like here. Draws post 2, can just sit covered up. Hopefully not get too much mud in his face. And then underneath that one, I'll go with Aidan O'Brien's number 3, Cape of Good Hope, who was a good winner 2 back against Cap Francais, so they had good form lines against each other. Cape of Good Hope went to Chantilly for the Prix de Jockey Club and was a good 4th. That was kind of a blanket finish that day. So he beat 4.75 lengths with Ryan Moore. Ryan Moore back on the son of Galileo. And this is the Galileo Danehill cross that produced none other than Frankel. And for third, we'll go with a grandson of Galileo, Buckhurst, from Joseph O'Brien, Aidan's son. Will be ridden by another one of Aidan's sons, Donegal O'Brien. And this one just looks like he's lightly raised, has an upside. And the Australians seem to be loaded with stamina. So we'll go 4-3-2. In the Hampton Court, going 1.25 miles. Race 3, we're at the Ribblesdale for fillies. 3-year-old fillies going 1.5 miles. I went with another Frankel, number 4, Frankelina from William Haggis. Haggis is one of the real underrated trainers that, at least for us, he's not over there, but for us he is. But he's a terrific trainer, and this one has upside with only 3 starts. Didn't run bad in the Epsom Oaks. Beaten less than 5 lengths. James Doyle returns. Underneath, I like number 5, Fresnel. See the Stars. I also love him on testing ground going long. He was part of a blanket finish in the Musidora behind Frankelina. So that form comes back in here. Does draw post 11, so somewhere along the line, Halpin's going to have to find a way to get over and save some ground. And third, I'll go with the favorite, Fleeting, from Aidan O'Brien. not sure about the pedigree for this one to get a mile and a half, even though she almost did it in the Yelp. Zoffany, in my mind, is more of a miler than a distance horse. But we'll see what kind of trip Ryan Moore can work out from post nine. But I do like number four, Frankelina, number five, Fresno, and those two over number three, Fleeting. And I'm trying to take into account ground and stamina and things like that since we've had the heavy rain all week. The fourth race is the Gold Cup, the premier marquee race of the entire meet. Stradivarius won this race last year for John Gosden and Frankie. I think they're a little bit vulnerable on the soft ground. And I'm going to go out to number nine, Flag of Honor for Maiden O'Brien. Has a bunch of seconds coming into the race, but that was behind, number one, the top filly, Magical, who ran second yesterday behind Crystal Ocean. And now we're stretching out to 2.5 miles. Now, he's run well going 2 miles. He's bred to certainly get the distance. And Ryan Moore's aboard, 15-1. Hopefully the soft ground will get this one into the mix. Second, we're going to go with the Melbourne Cup winner, Cross Counter, who they say the ground was soft that day, but the time was pretty fast. I don't think it was terribly soft. He did come back and win in Dubai at $1.5 million race, going 2 miles again in fast time. But that ground in Dubai never really gets firm. It's always kind of a spongy turf course. So he'll like today's conditions as long as we don't get any more rain. And for third, I'll go with the favorite, Stradivarius, but going 6 wins in a row, going for number 7. He's a horse for course. He was someone you could root for, but not necessarily bet on. So 9, 6, 4 in the Ascot Gold Cup, today's premier race, going 2.5 miles. A word on the other races. Now, I haven't been touting them. My picks are online at twinspires.com. But if you really want to get silly, some of these big field races are just crazy. And there are enormous prices available. And with the rain and conditions and everything, it's really become a crapshoot as to who's going to break, who's going to get a trip, who's going to like the ground. So if you see anything you like and it's at a price, don't hesitate. And like I say, if you like place betting, now they are going to have place payouts on the first four. Because in handicap racing, anything more 16 or more, they pay down 4 places. So you can run fourth and come out with a decent price. We saw that yesterday, especially in yesterday's last race where the horses were fairly logical. And so those are fun races to watch, fun races to bet. You can't really bet a lot on them, but if you see something, just make a bet and watch it and enjoy it.
Well, here's the here were the prices that Ali 1360 440 on the each way, and Ventura Rebel the 14 720, Dubai Station 1020, and the Dialed In finishing fourth, Strive for Glory, excellent. But Simon Crisford, who of course long associated with Godolphin, and then went out on his own, and has I think last year he broke through, right, with a Royal Meeting win, and so now 2 years in a row, right?
And it's funny because he's gone out on his own and has done very well, and John Ferguson, who used to be the main buyer for Godolphin, he's been training, and he has a string of jump horses and stuff like that, and he's done very well. So they're kind of showing us after the fact, these guys were legitimate horsemen.
Oh, sure. You know,
they weren't just bureaucrats out there buying horses. They were hands-on type people. Nice to see Simon get a win with his man Frankie, because Frankie rode a lot of winners when Simon was with Godolphin.
Dick, and you've worked on various tote issues and in your capacities. Is the swinger, is it a the Omni? Do you think it gets a chance here at any point? I mean, Naira gained approval for it several years ago and then kind of backed off the introduction of it. To me, it's a very good introductory multi-horse bet for people that sometimes wonder when they bet an exacta, early on in their development as horse players, and they get first and third or second and third, they wonder, oh, well, why didn't I win? it feels to me like the Omni would take root here pretty quickly. Or is it just another additional pool that's just going to siphon money out of other pools?
I think the negative, Steve, is we've developed this culture of bet a little, win a lot, and that's hard to go against. So these kind of bets, as logical as everything you just said, you might get newcomers to try it. You got to explain it to them, and any bet you got to explain is starting out in the red. And we just don't have that culture of, you know, looking to bet $2 and get $10 back, $12 back. We want to shoot for the moon and go broke while trying to do it. Well, so I agree. I like to bet myself, and it's a nice insurance policy if you're taking a stab in the wind pool or something like that. But I don't know how well it would do. I would be kind of bearish on its chances.
Well, I'll give this as an example. The getting the second and third place finishers in this opener in the Norfolk, Ventura Rebel and Dubai Station paid $72.90 for second and third. And first and second, Ali and Ventura Rebel, the 114 paid $32. The 1-4, first and third, paid $33. So if you manage to put the two longer shots together, you know, on your play, you got that. That's a nice number, 36-1.
And if you box the three, you got all three.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I was very excited about the prospect of the Omni being introduced in New York several years ago, and then as quickly as, you know, as news of it came, it then sort of, you know, disappeared, and after a while, you stop asking, are you ever gonna try this? Andy, I say this all the time. Andy had the greatest nickname for it, the Inexacta, which I love.
I like that.
And I don't think it's hard to explain. Instead of telling people the horses you use have to finish first and second, you can say the horses you use, all they have to do is hit the board, be first, second, or third, any combination thereof. And you know, after they try it and they cash it, the idea for me, Dick, is with new players, you want them to cash. You don't want them to come close and you know, look and say, gosh, I picked horses. And you know, then what they're going to do when they play exactas and they finish second and third or first and third, they're going to say, well, I'm going to bet show and you know, just, because they just want to cash tickets. So make it as easy for neophytes to cash as possible. And they will develop and they'll understand the transition from, you know, the Omni to betting, you know, straight exactas and betting $10 exactas and building up. I think we should make it as easy as possible for people to cash tickets early on.
I agree, and I think what we've lost in the game is just churn. And you probably remember, but I go back to the days when Oaklawn wouldn't even allow trifectas. They were slow to give exactas. They basically won a one-place show,
doubles.
Keeneland was very much the same. And even though you have to change because everyone else has changed, it's kind of sad that we've lost that focus and emphasis on making bets that you have a chance to win, but you also have the chance to have money in your pocket and keep betting throughout the day as opposed to, you know, pick threes and pick fours and keep stabbing, lose one, you're out, and stuff like that. So I'm not against either one, but I think the game was better when we had more churn. And when you look at, Bill Maiden made this presentation at one of the conferences I was at, and he had statistics from Hong Kong. And half the betting is win, place, quinella. So despite all these gimmicks that Hong Kong has with massive payouts, half the betting are those pools. And that's significant when you look at the dollar amounts and stuff.
Sure.
So they're used to it. The rest of the world is kind of used to it. Betting exchanges can only work with win betting. You know, you can have a couple of different things in there, but if you don't, like I once asked the president bets there. How do you think you're going to do it in North America when we bet so little in the wind pool? And he looked at me like, you know, he didn't like that question. And I think I'm right. You know, if you're going to come to this market where we're betting under 20% on win, not play show, just win, that's going to be tough to have a market arrangement on those type bets. Even if you can get the right odds, even if you can get 5-1 instead of 4-1, whatever it might be.
Well, speaking of prices, let's. I'm gonna give everybody the interesting horse. By the way, Dick, Buckhurst scratched out. The Joseph O'Brien came out, and so did that was the 2, and so did the 10 Headman, the Roger Charlton. So we're left with a field of 13 for the upcoming Hampton Court. And Cape of Good Hope and Fox Chairman are vying for favoritism on the tote and also in the bookie shops. The horse that is getting heavy play in the markets, King Otakar, 5-1, third choice, but on the tote, he's 13-1.
Wow.
And the horse that is taking that third choice money on the tote is Sangarius, the Judmont for Sir Michael and for Frankie. But Sangarius is about 6-1 in the shops, 4-1 on the tote. So the disparity is on King Otakar, who's taking plenty of action, basically less than half in the shops versus the tote. Kick on the Gosden for Qatar Racing. There's another one, 8-1 in the shops, 19-1 on the tote. You get O'Shane Murphy in there. So the 11 and the 12, I think you want to use in your plays, in your exotics coming up here in the Hampton Court. We're about 3 minutes away.
Very interesting. My number 4 is 21-1 on the tote. So I'll probably play one place on that one.
And I also, I retweeted Kev Humphreys this morning. Kev is using Cap Francais, who is 22-1, and that's Jamie Spencer.
That's
right?
The one I like.
For you, yeah, and you liked as well, Dick. And he also likes little Great Scott, 15-1 for Tom Dascombe. Empire State Racing Partnership, but I don't think it's the one that's been created by the New York Thoroughbred Horseman. This is a different Empire State Racing Partnership. And Kev is going to use Cape of Good Hope, the logical, with his two prices. But I'm encouraging people to keep an eye out for the 11 and the 12. Let me ask Joe, are you in good shape? You got the – let me look to the video and see if I think we're a little frozen right there. This is she's in good shape. Okay, Joe does have the video running smoothly, because in the first it was difficult. Yeah, there we go. We see him circling, so they're close to loading. So, Dick, stay with us, and we'll enjoy the running of the second race, the Hampton Court today, Royal Ascot. Then we'll check in with Tony Black. We'll get Tony in here and lead up to the Ribblesdale and then Steve Askin for the Gold Cup. Each and every Ascot, Steve Askin. And Steve's been over there a couple times. Dick, how many – you've been to Ascots?
No, I have not.
Not, that's right. You said Tuesday. That's right. You said you haven't been yet. That's right. That's
nope.
Right.
No, and the way things are going, Steve, I'll be happy to make Saratoga in 3 weeks.
But how many times have you been? But you've been to the Melbourne Cup twice?
Three times.
How about that? Wow, that's
the last Melbourne Cup I went to looked like yesterday. The first two, the country's been in a drought. Ground was rock hard, all that. The year I went when So You Think got beat, they said the ground was bottomless. Hose would go in and not ever hit bottom. And just wet as could be, really, really ugly. Even Saturday in the McKinnon Stakes, which So You Think won, and that was even wetter. The Melbourne Cup was just drenched with rain and was very unusual from my prior two trips over there.
Now, I'd love to go. I mean, that's down, on the list.
Down on, yeah, you definitely should. It's better than the experience. It exceeds all expectations. And especially from Saturday, after Saturday's races are run, till Tuesday, it's Super Bowl coverage of the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
Radio, TV, news, you can't believe it. And the race is just spectacular. So, all right, looks like they're loading.
Just about set. The race that stops a nation, as they call it, and the Hampton Court, just about set. Let's listen in to Royal Ascot, second race today.
Him, Roseman Andrea Adzeni in the saddle. Cap Francaise, you could say, has he had his chance? He's run a couple of Derby trials, he's finished thereabouts. Could he show a good showing today?
Well, he was behind Cape of Good Hope, wasn't he, at Epsom, and then he ran a fair race at Lingfield. Didn't really hit the line that strong, so interestingly, the team come back in distance with him.
He is a 12-1 shot, the last couple going forward, so let's hand you over to Richard Hoyles.
Thanks, Francesca. 10 furlongs, so we're on the round course here. Start on the descent down towards Swindley Bottom, mile and a quarter, and the runners are out to the starting stalls, and they're sent on their way. Fox Chairman just hustled out of the stalls and was squeezed, actually. Soon after the start, Global Spectrum came right across him. And Fox Chairman, along with Old Glory, the back markers early on. Front runners are Kick On and the King Sangarius in the white sleeves. Cape of Good Hope, Dark Jacket up the inside. Several taking a keen hold, suggesting they're not going that fast. The light green colours of Arthur Kitt is handy. Great Scott, his stable companion, settles in about fifth. King Otica is four wide with Global Spectrum. Fox Chairman, after that early bump, has recovered to midfield on the inside of Cap Francais at this stage. Then Getcha, and if the Royal Runner ate some real in the scarlet sleeves. And now the back markers are Roseman and Old Glory in the darker yellow with the blue. So making their way up now from Swindley Bottom, climbing steadily and racing towards the final six furlongs. And Kick On leading by half a length from Arthur Kitt. Great Scott has moved through to dispute third with Cape of Good Hope and Sangarius. The leaders are still pretty well bunched at this stage. Just behind these, Fox Chairman with Cap Francais, and behind those on the outside is King Otica in the pale colours. Eight Some Real and Getcha, and still towards the back, Old Glory and Roseman. So still the pace not frantic. Kick On waiting in front with Arthur Kitt half a length away. Sangarius in the centre of the chasing trio with Great Scott and Cape of Good Hope is on the running rail in the dark blue. Global Spectrum corners in sixth place, with in seventh place racing Fox Chairman as they make their way round the bend. King Otica comes next from Cap Francais. Then behind these, Getcha, Eight Some Real. Last two to straight will be Old Glory and Roseman. Kick On now asked to do just that. And he develops into a bit of a dash with Arthur Kitt, Great Scott, Sangarius. Fox Chairman once again needs some luck. Cape of Good Hope's got it. A perfect split at the right time. He looms. So does King Otica. It's an open race. Sangarius in the centre now moves through. And it's Sangarius with King Otica right down the outside. Eight Some Real for Her Majesty. Fox Chairman's had a luckless trip. But Sangarius got first run and a break by two lengths from King Otica. Fox Chairman is out. But it's too late. Frankie again. So did Kick On and Old Glory. Fourth winner of the week and a day three double for Frankie Dettori. Sangarius put it all together today. Tight for second between Fox Chairman, who once again got a luckless run, possibly narrowly from King Otica, who covered a bit of ground early on. Eight Some Real was in fourth place. Roseman's actually run pretty well because has come right from the back of the pack to possibly grab fifth from the better positioned Arthur Kitt. But
there you go.
Sangarius,
a horse
in the past, has promised a lot.
How about Frankie coming back again, and you're very familiar colors of Judmont, the light green and the pink sash, Khalid Abdullah and Sir Michael. How about that? A resounding winner. And behind him, so it's 15-6, 12-5. And that King Otica that we pointed out because of the betting markets, ended up getting some late money, but still, you still are going to boost the try. And the favorite, Fox Chairman, kind of came running late for King Power and Andrew Balding to nab second. Dick?
Well, this is the first crop of Kingman, who stands for Judmont, just like Frankel does over there, and he's off to a terrific start. He was a miler as a racehorse, and now he gets a mile and a quarter winner. I saw the time was 2:08, so probably 5 seconds slower than normal. But Frankie got split. He was able to get covered up, but when he needed to split, it was there, and he seized the advantage. And what we've seen in some of these races, Steve, jocks, especially Frankie, he's not afraid to move early. You know, if you're going to take a lead and open up any kind of separation, then you just try to gut it out to the wire. You can't time these races because, you know, you're kind of spinning your wheels underneath. So if you got momentum, you see the opening, you got to seize it, and Frankie can do it as good as anybody.
Well, and also, for the deep closers, when it gets soft like this, when you're soft, it's tough to quicken. And so seizing control when your horse is in the bridle and is, you know, ready to run, going ahead and making everybody catch, the deepest closers are going to be compromised. It is not easy to quicken. So, you know, you mentioned Kingman. Kingman runs 1-2 because Fox Chairman is a Kingman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and you even foretold this because you referenced the great Dave Kingman.
Yeah, who was ahead of his time as far as home runs and strikeouts, which is basically all he did at that.
Absolutely.
Now every major leaguer is home runs and strikeouts, but Kingman was.
Well, I could reach for one of the great audio tapes in baseball history, one of the great postseason interviews, and I could pull it out if we had the quick fingers of Casey at our disposal. I would send him a link to Tommy Lasorda being asked, "What did you think of Kingman's performance?" When Kingman hit 3 home runs against the Dodgers, I think drove in what, 7. And have you ever heard that, Dick?
No.
It's an absolute scream, and Lasorda goes nuts. What did I think of Kingman's performance? What did I think of Kingman's performance? He hit 3 home runs and drove in 7-8, right? What did I think of Kingman's performance? It's the greatest. And then, of course, he swears a blue streak. It is just hysterical.
Tommy's still alive. I saw him at the game when the Mets were out there. And he's one of the few guys who does not bow to the greatness of Sandy Koufax.
Wow.
He has this big issue with Sandy because back then when you were a bonus baby, you had to go on the major league roster. So Sandy was on the roster when he was totally unprepared to be in the major leagues. But that spot would have been Tommy Lasorda. And Tommy, like, never got over. And Tommy pitched up here in Schenectady, in the minor league team in Schenectady.
I've heard that actually. He came to the area for something, for a function, not too long ago. I actually have found this the internet remains undefeated. And it was apparently Paul Olden who asked Lasorda about it, and I will provide a link for those who have never heard it. Look at this. New York Times had an article about it in April of 2015. Oh my God! And then there's also the great Kurt Pavakwa. there's Lasorda, so great. Well, Dick, I appreciate this. Is a lot of fun, and this was great.
And if I can get any information on the Toke stuff, I'll text it to you.
That'd be great. I appreciate it. Well done.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody. We'll talk next week. Let's take a break, our first of the morning, or actually second of the morning, and we'll come back with Tony Black. Haven't had a chance to catch up with Tony, and we missed him last week. So we'll get Tony in here. Or actually, I think we caught him right at the end of the show, last Thursday. So we'll get Tony in and Steve Haskin, Rich Eng, and much more. Two more races